What's up, Internet? Welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm senior editor Devendra Hardwar. This week, I'm joined by our podcast producer, Ben Ellman. Hey, Ben.
Hello. How's it going?
Hello. It's going good. Kind of a light ship this week because a lot of people are out. Sherwin's on taking some break, and a lot of people are just busy at Engadget. So it's just going to be us, but we've got a lot of news to dive into. All of Apple's new Macs with M4 chips, the M4 Pro and M4 Max as well, that they all just announced this week. There's a lot of new stuff, and I'm excited to talk about it. As always, folks, though, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. Drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. And you can join us Thursday mornings, typically around 10:45 a.m. Eastern, on our YouTube channel for our live stream so we can do some Q&A. In fact, we'll be including some of those questions and our answers later in this episode as well. So, yeah, tune in for that. Ben, you are somebody who I know is fully in the Mac ecosystem, and I also know you're very conscientious. Well, unfortunately, or for what you do, you're kind of there. But you're also very conscientious about how you upgrade, right? Because we're dragging you into a modern iPhone and things like that. How did you feel about all these new Macs? Because we have the M4 iMac. We have an adorable new Mac Mini, which is tiny, absolutely tiny. And M4 chips in the MacBook Pros. Is anything particularly compelling to you?
So as I was reading up on all of the stuff they released this week, I saw the line that said something like the M4, I think it was Pro chip, is now like three times faster than the now ancient M1.
That chip is 4 years old now. So
that cut me like a knife. But that is M1 Classic, not M1 Pro.
Yes.
I do believe that my research says that the M1 Pro is only two times slower than this new M4 Pro. Please fact check me on this. Send us an email at podcast@engadget if I didn't get that right.
You bring up a good point, though, Ben. Be sure to be very clear about what Apple is comparing its devices to, right? Because they often go back to base M1, which was released at the end of 2020. It took a full year before we got the M4 Pro and M4 Max chips, right? Before they really expanded the line.
No, you mean M1 Pro and M1 Max.
M1 Pro and M1 Max, yeah. So remember that there was that time difference when they just dropped the M1 on us, and that was on the MacBook Air, MacBook Pro 13-inch, which was a freaking waste of time, and the Mac Mini, I believe, back then, right? So,
but then this calls back to a bigger contextual question that I have. Why is Apple doing this? They are just releasing a bunch of stuff kind of quietly. They're putting it on the website. They're sending out like press releases and stuff. Usually, they love to bring everyone onto the campus like they did just a couple of months ago and show you nonsense graphs with absolutely no measurements on them, saying how much faster this chip is than a chip that they released a few years ago. Is there any like chatter on why they're doing it kind of quietly like this?
Yeah. So, let's talk about what happened this week, right? So they announced last week, or they confirmed, that there will be a series of Mac news announcements, but we didn't know if it would just be a live stream. We didn't know if it would just be video recordings and news drops. And that's what it ended
up
being.
They love a song and dance, and there has been no song and dance.
I mean, I feel it. I'm sure even Apple is tired of hosting these song and dances or media events. And especially for machines that aren't like too different than before. The Mac Mini is like a new one. The Mac Mini like looks interesting. And I feel like Apple of yore would have done at least a small press event in New York or something to show off that particular piece of hardware. But also, I don't know, man, everyone's tired. I feel like that's what we're feeling right now. You know, everyone's tired. We are in this election cycle, which is just about to end. And I feel like they kind of got the news out there, right? They produced a couple of videos. They said, hey, we just announced the M4 chip. Here's the M4 Pro and M4 Max. Here are new systems. You kind of know what the deal is. And I feel like that's pretty much it.
Are you saying that they might be playing some kind of meta game where they're like, you know what? We're not going to ask all these tech journalists to fly out again and like eat half to three quarters of their week going to hang out with us, because their grumpiness about having to do that when it's getting toward the end of the year and they've got so much else on their plate might bleed into like, man, why did they fly us out for this? Like, yes, they're improvements.
I think it's even on their end. I think they are tired too, like to produce an event, to coordinate everything for a launch. it's a lot of work. And I feel like even the people at Apple are like, you know, we don't need to go this hard. Like, they produced a couple of videos. They got the press releases out there. They pre-briefed some press. So I got like a bit of early info on this. I didn't get early info on the iMac. There are reports that they held some sort of hands-on event in LA. At least that's what Mark Gurman said in his newsletter. And I have not seen any of those things out yet. So maybe those hands-ons will drop later today or tomorrow or something.
And to be fair, yeah. The iPhone 16 launch event was on Monday, September 9th, which means that it was just a month and a half ago.
Yeah, I feel like they're done. Like, the major things for Apple are the iPhone event, maybe like a product event early in the year, and then WWDC, you know? So, and the other thing is, maybe we are amidst the like delayed launch of Apple Intelligence, right? Which also launched this week across devices with iOS 18.1 and the macOS stuff. And I also wonder if Apple's just like tired of answering questions about that. Like, even that was like a muted, hey, here are a few Apple Intelligence features. That new Siri, not here yet. That'll be here soon. And also, all this stuff is being slow rolled out. So strategy wise, what we saw Apple do, I think last year, Ben, I think they just like did one day where they posted a video and was just like, hey, here's all the news. I wonder if this is a new strategy for Apple where they did it throughout the week. Little tidbits of news, and we're talking about it throughout the entire week, and they own that week, you know? So I think there's a lot of value to that.
Yeah, same thing as not dropping an entire series of a show all at once, because if you do it weekly like you used to, then people are talking about it week to week. The whole like entertainment news industrial complex can do their recaps and everything.
Exactly, exactly. So let's take a look at what Apple has launched this week. On Monday, we got the new iMac M4 with brighter colors, I guess you could say.
Are we talking brighter colors on the front or the back?
On the back, right? There's no real colors on the front. No, you get the front colors too. You have the like little chin on the iMac. But it's the design, the thinner design they launched with the M1 chips, now in slightly brighter colors. M4 chip also has, let me just see here, it also has a trend that we started seeing this week, 16 gigabytes of RAM as the base amount without changing the base price. So,
and who can we thank for that?
I would say AI. I would say Apple Intelligence. And that's also something we've seen throughout this entire year, but I'll get to that. So $1,299 for the new M4 iMac, has 16 gigabytes of RAM, has much faster hardware, at least with this M4 chip. There are four USB-C ports on the pricier one with a 10-core CPU and GPU for the M4. I assume you'll get less on the cheaper one. You can upgrade up to 32 gigabytes of RAM. This is a nice system. I like the new iMacs. Have you seen these things, Ben, in action?
I'm going to be straight up with you. I have not seen a iMac in action.
Really?
Since maybe like before college or something.
You've been in a Mac store, Ben. Come on.
Yeah, okay. Yes, I've been in a Mac store, but like I haven't seen them in the wild outside of their enclosure for a very long time. For a while, that was like the way that you signaled to people, especially in education settings, that your educational institution had money.
Sure, yeah.
And that actually gets to another question of like, okay, you have these like pretty colored anodized aluminum backs for the iMacs. And what do they do in most like non-open plan office settings? They're going to be pointed to the wall, probably. You're not even going to be able to enjoy them.
You get some color on the front. You get color on the base. The bases all have color too. And honestly, a lot of open offices have like, they're not pointing at the wall, right? They're cubicles or like mini desks like in the middle of the room and maybe sometimes facing each other. I love this machine. Like Apple just did a great job of making this thing super slim. It is very light. It's easy to move around. You certainly couldn't, you know, mistake it for a laptop or something. But when I reviewed the M1 iMac, was it the M2? Like whatever the last one I reviewed, like I was just so impressed at being able to move that thing around.
And I remember portability was part of the original like pitch for this, like years and years ago.
Yeah, like you could bring it from your den to your, you know, dining room or something and do something with your kids and then bring it back. It's just one cable. You plug it in, you haul over the accessories, and it's not that tough. So I've actually, for a while, been contemplating just getting an iMac, like one of these new iMacs, and having it be like the family computer, especially for my daughter, who's getting more into computing stuff right now. Like she is big on iPads. She's big on touchscreens. Minecraft is like the thing she does. And she has some like iPad reading games and language games and stuff.
So but this would be like the living room computer or something.
Could be. And we have a space for it, or we move it up to like an upstairs office or something. But I just see the value here. So I think this is a great machine. It's great to have new hardware in here. Even better that it has 16 gigabytes of RAM. And yeah, as you were saying, Ben, I think we really can thank Apple Intelligence for that. Mark Gurman in his last newsletter reported that, you know, we've seen Apple Intelligence basically eat up 8 gigabytes of RAM on its own. So because it's running large models, large language models and different things. And it's no wonder that Microsoft's Copilot Plus PCs, those AI PCs, also require at least 16 gigabytes of RAM. I think what we're seeing is like that is the cost of running these AI models, because what they're doing is basically chewing up large amounts of data or processing it against your current data, and that takes memory. And I think for the longest time, PC makers were like, hey, 8 gigabytes, that's fine, right? They kind of drag their heels even moving beyond 4 gigabytes. When we review systems, we always recommend go for at least 16 gigabytes. You don't really want to be opening up your computer and adding in more RAM. And even for newer computers, you can't really do that. You can't do that with Apple's hardware because the RAM is built onto the processor. So this is good. It's a good thing. Even if you don't care about Apple Intelligence, you can thank AI for this at least. So that's the iMac. Any thoughts? Like, are you compelled by this?
And you've been talking about, like, why do they even sell an 8 gig RAM version for a few years now? Because as the IT person, both formerly professionally and IT person of your family,
for life, basically,
you're always on call to be like, okay, well, you know what? I think I just want a laptop that like can do word processing. And then all of a sudden somebody's like, oh, well, my kid wants to edit a video on it. And that's all it takes to justify a upgrade to 16 gigs.
Exactly. And I mean, the cost in the past also wasn't that much, but it was still something. And a lot of like mainstream buyers just didn't go for it. I think this is a good thing. This is a good thing for everybody. Certainly like for the people who never made that bump before. When I talked to Apple before why 8 gigabytes was still the thing they were doing, they kept telling me like the M series chips are more memory efficient, which is kind of technically true. So they could maybe stretch 8 gigabytes of RAM more than before. They're also, the memory bandwidth was faster than before because the memory chips are right there next to the CPU and like it can all like be processed much more quickly. But yeah, 16 gigabytes is the standard. And now I'm introducing a new standard, folks. If you're listening to this show, if you like to play games, if you like to edit the occasional video or something, or just like put something up on Instagram or TikTok, 32 gigabytes of RAM. Let's go all in on 32 gigabytes of RAM. How much RAM do you have in your MacBook, Ben?
I told you, 32 gigs, and that was partially subsidized by COVID stimulus checks.
Well, there is that too. But 32 gigabytes really gives you room to breathe. And if you're working on a large project, then yeah, that's something that you definitely want. So I'm just putting that out there. Now that 16 gigabytes seems like the baseline standard, most folks will be fine with that. But if you are a prosumer, if you're a creative professional, at least 32 gigabytes now, Mac and PC would be a good
thing. Yeah, I feel like my position on the show is to act as the non-expert but still smarter than maybe the average user, a little bit smarter than the average user. And so when I was speccing out this laptop, I was thinking, okay, I want the M1 Pro because it's still going to be like so much of an upgrade over the Intel chip in my 2012 era MacBook Pro. And also I want to be able to future-proof it. So I didn't know what was going to happen in the future. Like generative AI, all of that stuff was just getting started around the time when I like finally pushed purchase on this laptop. And I'm really happy that I did some future-proofing and went for the 32 gig option.
Definitely. Always future-proof. And especially, I think our recommendation was, Ben, that you do that, because what you can't do, you can't open up a Mac of any kind now, not a laptop, not a desktop, unless it's a Mac Pro. No, you can't even do it with the Mac Pro, because the Mac Pro is also running an M-series chip. There is no memory upgrades are not a thing anymore, at least on a self-contained chip like this. So, yeah, buy as much as you can. Like, you know, suffer a little bit to put more RAM in there if you have to.
Okay, so let's talk about this adorable Mac Mini.
I think the Mac Mini is the star of the week, right? Because this thing, we expected a new Mac Mini. Mark Gurman was reporting like there would be some sort of small redesign. It is small, or small, as internet speak would say it. It's 5 inches by 5 inches. It measures 2 inches tall. If you look at the pictures, like it's just like on somebody's fingertips. This is a... It's a small boy, but it's not a weak boy because it has the M4 chip and it also introduced the M4 Pro chip, which is supposed to be really, really fast. And this is a good time to like think about like what the Mac Mini represents too. Like I remember when this thing came out, I was also working in IT around 2005. That original Mac Mini was kind of a slow little box, but it was an interesting idea that not many people were doing. I honestly think you can like really trace the small PC trend back to the Mac Mini. Because Intel's Nooks and other things people did kind of followed with what that was. Do you have any experience with the Mac Mini, Ben? Any thoughts on like the previous Mac Minis?
The studio that I used to work at on the Upper West Side ran entirely on a Mac Mini.
Amazing. Like you can, and that was like years ago, right? That was like before the M series Mac.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. And this was also done by like old school audio engineers who really value the stability of their like workspaces over everything. So they are very slow to upgrade. And this thing was still chugging along really well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so the Mac Mini has been a great thing for a while. The last one, did that one get the M3 chip? I think they had skipped that one. But the last Mac Mini I reviewed where they introduced the Pro chip for the first time, that thing blew me away because that thing was just super fast. It kind of delivered most of what you wanted from a Mac Studio, but it was far cheaper than Studio. With the Pro chip, it was still more expensive than like the base model. It was like $1,299. Let me look up that review actually.
Plus, it looks like it's small enough to fit in the enormous pockets of like JNCO jeans that are coming back in style very slowly.
Honestly, I don't even think you need like big baggy JNCO jeans for this thing. I think this thing could fit in like a normal jean pocket, or at least I've been able to fit large packages in mine. I don't know. That's the whole like thing. It's adorably small. I think, you know, the Mac Mini has just been something. When I reviewed the M2 Pro Mini last year, early last year, it was January 28th, 2023, I was just super impressed by the M2 Pro chip. And they're kind of doing that again here. I think for most people, this is kind of all the desktop you need, certainly all the Mac desktop you need. It's also like the only new one with an M-Pro chip that you, or an M4 chip that you'll be able to buy. The Mac Studio has not been updated yet, so they're projecting like maybe spring for that. But you know what? Like this thing is great. This thing is so tiny, you can put it pretty much anywhere. It also comes with 16 gigabytes of RAM standard. Still starts at $599 with the base M4 chip.
That's base M4.
That's still pretty powerful.
Also, yeah. Let's talk about the ports for a second, too. So they're all Thunderbolt now?
They're all, the rear ones, I believe, are Thunderbolt because they have the little Thunderbolt picture on them. But let's talk about those ports because you'll notice something up front that we complained about with the last review. Ports up front. Last year, if you wanted like a Mac with accessible USB ports up front, you had to get a Mac Studio. That was like one of the big reasons to do it. And it seems like Apple saw that criticism and directly addressed that. So there were two USB-C ports up front. There's also the headphone jack up front. Around the back, the base M4 model gets you Thunderbolt 4 support, which is pretty good. But if you go up to the M4 Pro, you get Thunderbolt 5 support. And that is really interesting. It's the first time we've seen Thunderbolt 5 on Macs. It also like is not really on many PC systems yet. I had written up Thunderbolt 5 last year. Let me see here. It delivers up to 3 times the bandwidth of Thunderbolt 3. So that's pretty good. Memory bandwidth should also be much better with the new Thunderbolt. So that's kind of interesting because it does open up the door for better external GPU support. We didn't really like external GPU docks for a while because Thunderbolt 3 and before were just a little slow. Like if you bought a nice GPU, you were not getting all that speed. Now you could potentially do that. I've also seen Apple and others talk about things like AI accelerators, which are just like little GPU boxes, basically, that just do AI work, not even for like games.
Yeah.
So that's what that opens up. So, and that M4 Pro Mac Mini starts at $1,399. That's what you'd pay for a decently powerful desktop, you know? So if you are somebody working in audio or video, and you don't need the full capabilities of the Mac Studio, which is...
Especially yeah. video, because if you need to dump like 120 Gbps onto a drive or something, that's probably going to be video. That's probably going to be like really complicated, like 3D rendering or something. Like, that's an enormous amount of data.
That's a ton of data. That's the main thing. And $1,399, hey, it is much more expensive than the base model, but that is a really powerful little system. And like, look at how far we've come from like the giant desktop towers. I have a giant desktop tower down here.
A pocketable desktop computer. That's nuts.
It's just, it's super great. Like, it's one of those things where I've showed this to people and they were like, I don't really need this, but I want to give it a home. I want to find a place for it. Yeah.
Because it looks like a puppy.
It's adorable.
But also, that reminds me, a few weeks ago when we were talking off stream, off podcast, I was saying something about how, like, maybe it would be worth like investing in a Mac Mini, because it's just like every time I take my laptop out, especially because this is like the biggest investment that I think I've ever made. I have never bought a car, and this thing that I have in front of me right now is the price of, let's say, a kind of decent used car circa 2019. A while ago,
maybe,
before the
maybe
pandemic.
Maybe 2019, but it depends. Like, I mean, how much... So yeah, go ahead.
Every time I take it out in the wild, I'm like, oh, I don't like this. This is not a controlled environment it's like it is in my house. I thought it would be nice to get another thing that would just sit on my desk and like never actually have to go out into the elements.
It's also nice to have a failsafe. It's nice to have another system to turn to if your MacBook explodes or won't boot for some reason. Like, I think in general, if you're a professional...
I hope not.
If you're a professional that relies on your computers, the best thing you could do is have more than one computer. I think that's like a pretty good sound piece of advice.
But yeah. You said that the Mac Mini might end up being underpowered due to, I think, like inability to get heat out. Can you say more about that?
I mean, I think that was... I don't know if I had said that recently, though, Ben, because like the M series chips in general don't get super hot. So I think that's partially why Apple was able to make this thing so much smaller. It is bringing in air, like the intake fans are like on the bottom. You can see some fins there. So it is bringing in air, and it's like dealing with heat in some ways. But
how big can the fans actually be on a thing like this, though?
I don't know. I think Apple had the video or had the thing in the actual, let me see, in their launch video.
I'm looking forward to seeing a teardown of this to see what the actual diameter of the fan is going to be.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably just one big fan, I believe. I don't think you need to worry about heat too much because the Apple Silicon chips in general don't generate that much heat. So the fact that they can do this, the fact that they can still have MacBook Airs out there, they're decently powerful with no fans, is like, you know, is a testament to like what they've been doing in terms of low power.
Unless you have your desk in front of a window and like sun is coming down directly on it, like
maybe.
You talked about a while
then
ago.
You know, you could give your Mac Mini a little home, give it a little like sun shield box, you know, as long as there's airflow underneath, because
build a little cabana for
it. A little cabana, but also make sure there's airflow in that cabana. When I was in IT, like that was the thing. People would complain, oh, my PC is always shutting down. It never seems to boot properly. I'm like, well, you have your desktop system in like a cubby, in a closet with a closed front door. There's no air coming through. You know, it's like you're choking your computer to death. I think that's less of a problem here. But anyway, I'm really excited about this thing.
So Mark Dell in the chat says, no Mac Studio?
No Mac Studio. Not yet. And I think the Mac Studio is still running M2 chips, right? So the thinking now is that there's going to be a spring event where we get more on like M4 for Mac Studio. There's also no MacBook Air announcement yet with M4 chips, but more on that soon. Yeah.
And I guess if you're talking about like visual branding or something like that, Apple might be like, okay, so now we can say that the Mac Mini is truly mini, and they might use a similar... Mm-hmm. like slightly updated version of the case for the old Mac Mini on the Mac Studio. And they can say like, okay, now this is like your slightly bigger, but way more powerful entertainment production workstation.
Maybe.
Or something.
I don't think they need to do that at all. Like, the Mac Mini exists to be powerhouse where you don't have to worry about heat. You don't have to worry about anything. And also they need to have room for all those ports on the Mac Mini, or the Mac Studio is what I mean. So the Mac Studio is meant to be the more powerful thing. The thing is, nobody is buying the Mac Pro. Like, they updated the Mac Pro. We saw that last year. nobody can afford that thing. It also functionally is not that much better than the Mac Studio with the MX chips or the Pro chips. So I think the vast majority of creators, unless you're like high-end visual effects people at Disney or something, are running Mac Studios, and you need room.
And in that case, you're actually just like throwing something to a render farm, probably.
Probably.
You're not doing it on your desktop machine.
Probably. I mean, you're probably doing like pre-renders and stuff on your desktop and then throwing it to render farm for final work. Certainly no final jobs are being done on an actual single desktop, but you know, the Mac Studio is a really interesting thing, and I'm wondering if Apple's rethinking like how that thing is going to be positioned, because yeah, it's much more expensive. And I think for the vast majority of creatives, like this thing, this Mac Mini with the M4 Pro chip, is kind of it. And I don't need it. I certainly don't need it, but I am tempted to like get one and make it my Plex server or something. Like just make it a little headless system that sits somewhere that I can tap into.
But also think about it. Like a tech guy like you probably has a lot of pretty decent monitors just lying around. And so if you're talking about the possibility of getting a iMac
exactly
to set up in some public place for Sophia or, you know, both of your kids to use as they grow up, why not actually just get this? Because this is really easy. It's also very portable.
I'm certainly thinking about that.
It's less of an investment for you.
I bought my wife an ultrawide monitor for her like office space years ago, so she uses that occasionally with her laptop. But now there is an open space in our upstairs office area where we could just plug in a Mac Mini and the kids can go. But I can't bring that to like the kitchen, right? Or I can't bring that to downstairs so the kids can do something where we're all around. And that's where,
because it's not an all-in-one.
It's not an all-in-one. So that's where like the whole setup issues come in. Anyway, I cannot wait to get my hands on this thing. It is adorable. This is like, I think, a testament to the whole idea of a small desktop too. Like if you had told me this is what a Mac Mini would look like way back in 2005, almost 20 years ago, you know, I would have been shocked, because I was there used to digging into large Dell desktops and things like that. That was my life back then. We have come so far. The only downside is like nothing is upgradable anymore. You can't upgrade the RAM. You can't swap out, you know, your Wi-Fi card if something goes wrong. So that is the price we pay for all that.
And I think the last thing that came out during this Mac week was that the AirPods Pro 2 hearing features were finally released. Is that
true? That's one of the things. Yeah, the AirPods Pro 2 hearing features, the hearing tests and all that stuff is up there. I believe we have a post on that. So you can check to see if your AirPods think you have hearing issues. I think everybody should do this, because we don't think enough about our hearing, like what the status of our actual hearing is. So
the thing that I still wish I got out of Apple's health app, because I'm checking it all the time just to see how many steps I took. Like, that's my pedometer. Then I see the other thing of, like, you know, hearing check or something. This was, you know, an older version of iOS, because I have an old phone, as we've talked about. It's telling me, like, how loud the things I've been listening to are. And it only works when I have my wired earpods in. I really wish that they could have done something to like make third-party Bluetooth earbuds more compatible with the health app, because I am curious how much I'm putting into my ears every day.
Yeah.
I work with these things.
Yeah.
And I can only get it like during the maybe like 20 minutes to 45 minutes a week I spend using the earpods for like the best quality phone mic, because sometimes I like to do business calls with that. And I think that honestly, if you're giving someone Bluetooth quality of your voice, that sounds a little bit unprofessional.
It's
I want to sound as professional as possible.
Although I think the AirPods mics, like if you're using an AirPod versus the EarPod versus the wire, it's not a huge difference from what I've seen.
I just don't have AirPods. I have Jabra. Suggested by you.
Yes, I did. That was years ago. That was certainly years ago. Now is a good time, Ben, to do that upgrade whenever you upgrade your iPhone. You're in the ecosystem, man. Now, this is the thing. Like, Apple can do
just
this.
Just go for it.
Apple can do this with AirPods, like, to add in all these new features, because they have their own wireless chip. They can do things beyond what plain Bluetooth headsets have. Jabra doesn't even exist anymore. Jabra is not making headsets anymore or headphones. It sucks. It sucks that company has just fully given up on the market.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, I think this is a cool feature. I also, this is tempting me as like, I want to get like a professional ear cleaning, which I know is a thing and is like the big social media hype thing right now. But I kind of want to do that. I'm pretty sure you would probably benefit a lot from that, Ben, because we always have stuff in our ears.
Yeah. Oh, I was told by a ENT that I have that kind of earwax, but we'll move on from
that. Let's move
very
on
quickly.
From the earwax talk.
So
also MacBook Pro. We should talk about the MacBook Pro.
Oh, yeah, MacBook Pro. The last thing that I wanted to say about the hearing features is that I'm still reticent to use it, even if I could, even if I had all the equipment that I needed, just because like getting that assessment and then just having to sit with it might be a little bit scary.
That is human psychology.
Like, I would much... Yeah, so I'd much prefer doing a very similar thing like at the combined ENT audiologist place, because then at least I can ask some follow-up questions.
Sure, sure. But
rather than having to sit there and feel branded with the like, oh my God, I can't hear the mosquito tone anymore.
Doing it at home may encourage more people to like go get their ears checked out. I think that's a big benefit here too. So it's going to be a huge thing. I have not done that test yet, so I need to do that. We should talk about the...
Okay, so MacBook Pro. Yep.
Pros. They are getting the M4 chips. They're going to get the M4, M4 Pro, and the new M4 Max chip, which was also introduced this week. Apple's not really giving us many details on these chips, by the way. We know the M4 Max is going to be a 16-core CPU. The M4 Pro is a 14-core CPU, 20-core GPU. The plain M chip is available in either 8 or 10 core variations in a 10 core GPU. So that's kind of like how they're scaling it. It's also why like the Mac Mini with the M4 Pro is twice the cost of the base Mac Mini. That's just kind of what you're paying for there. There really aren't any changes, like not many major changes to the new MacBook Pros. They are bringing the space black color, which was on the 16-inch, down to the 14-inch now. Everything starts with 16 gigabytes of RAM. Great. That was one of our complaints with the 14-inch MacBook Pro last time I reviewed it. Let me see here. There's also this and the iMac also have a nano texture option for their screens. And that could be useful for anybody doing work in really bright environments or direct sunlight. So if you're working in the desert and you need to bring your MacBook out there, even with a great high quality screen, there will be glare. It'll be hard to make things out. The nano texture stuff kind of erases a lot of that glare. From what I hear, it also messes with color accuracy and like HDR output. So most people, it would actually be a worse thing for most people. But if you are in that super bright environment, nano texture could be great. The MacBook Pros have 1000 nits of SDR brightness now, up from 600 nits. Also, they both have 12 megapixel center stage webcams. The iMac also has a better webcam. And before they just had like 1080p, very basic 1080p camera. So that's all good thing. Same starting price for the MacBook Pros, $1,599 for the 14-inch, $1,999 for the M4 Pro model. The 16-inch still starts at $2,499. And also, if you are in a school, take advantage of those education discounts because they shave off like easily $100.
Yep.
And that makes a big difference. You know, do that. Many schools also offer like ways to pay for things over time, or you could buy it from Apple Store and do the paying over time and it builds your credit. It's like a thing. I'm not going to like say go take out a loan on a computer. But, you know, if you break up a more expensive device into smaller monthly payments, it hurts a lot less. That's how I freelanced and got decent computers while I was freelancing. So... Yeah.
How long has it been that the MacBook Pro had 1080p cameras? So finally, finally,
I think since
they're getting better.
I mean, it was. I think since I moved to the M1 chip, or since like the M2, when the major MacBook Pro redesign was, I was like late 2021. I believe then they got 1080p cameras, and Apple just never really focused that much on cameras. We've complained about them forever, but now that they have center stage, now that they're doing more processing with the camera stuff, and I think that's a big deal. Now Apple realized like, oh yeah, people need to do a lot more video calls and video conferencing than they used to. The pandemic certainly accelerated that. So there's that whole thing. One thing I do want to mention, the MacBook Airs. The current M2 MacBook Air and the M3 model now also start with 16 gigabytes of RAM. The M2 MacBook Air starts at $999. The M3 model starts at $1099. Just get that. Like, it is worth spending an extra $100 for that. 16 gigabytes of RAM, that's great. Good news.
And it's especially good because that's the computer that I know a lot of people will bring to college. And so it gives you a lot more wiggle room in terms of what you can do on that computer. You don't know what class you're going to end up taking. You might end up taking a video editing or audio editing class. And I've watched people try to do heavy lift stuff on MacBook Airs, and it's been sad.
It's been, I mean, that stuff has been sad, but I've seen people try to bring like Chromebooks to college. You know, I'm like, I strongly worry, you know, try to get people out of Chromebooks for college stuff. Like, Chromebooks are great for grade school stuff right now. Like, in kindergarten, my daughter occasionally messes with a Chromebook in school. That's the level of work you can do with a Chromebook, maybe into high school. But once you're doing college work with like major programs, not so much.
Yeah, I don't think they're doing it because they think they can get away with a Chromebook. I think it's because the Chromebooks are cheap.
Oh, most definitely. The Chromebooks, I mean, that's the thing, but I'm at least trying to encourage people, at least get a Windows laptop, at least get something that is a little more flexible and functional. I think that would make a big difference, especially in college, where you don't want to be like 2 or 3 years in, like swapping computers and stuff. You know, you kind of want to have something that lives with you for a while. And it is your everything when you're in college, right? It's your TV. It's your work machine. It's everything for you. So anyway, good news. We don't know like what Apple Intelligence will do down the line. Like, will these features start to be super memory intensive? Will 16 gigabytes not feel like enough if you're running some crazy AI feature down the line? We don't know. We kind of don't know what any of that stuff is. But hey, for now, good news.
So I do have some questions from the chat, and chat, now is your time to put in additional questions, because this is going to be on the final audio recording, finally. And if you want to participate in chat, remember, stop in on the Engadget YouTube page Thursday mornings, that's US Eastern Time, at 10:45. You can also join in. You can maybe have your name said on air as well. So first one that we have is from Wes Jackson, and this was from early in the segment, and Wes Jackson was saying, like, it's kind of a big yawn for everything. So maybe that's why they didn't do a song and dance. Maybe that's why they didn't give us the silly graphs.
Kind of. I mean, I could see Apple of yore doing an event, like some gathering for the Mac Mini, because I think the Mac Mini is worth celebrating. Like, that is a cool design. It is like an engineering feat that they've been able to make that thing so small.
And then Danny Diaz says, I like these mini events. The format allows me to digest the event right from Apple. Otherwise, I just end up seeing the supercuts on YouTube anyway.
Pretty much. I think that's it. And Apple is aware of like people getting tired of the major events too. It's sort of the Marvel problem, sort of the Star Wars problem, right? If you have too much, you dilute the market with things and people are less excited for when you actually have something big that you want them to pay attention to. So I'm sure Apple is well aware of that and changing attention spans. Maybe someday we'll see something happen entirely in like a short form social media too, like all span through 10 TikTok videos, you know, or 10 YouTube shorts to see this entire announcement. Maybe we'll get there.
Buddy305Love says to me specifically, Ben, HP has been making pocket-sized PCs for years.
Sure, yes.
Do you know a model that I can go look up?
Are they any good? Like, Intel has been making small NUCs forever. A lot of PC companies have been doing this. I reviewed way back when I first started Engadget, like 2014, 2015, I used to review the Intel, what do they call it? The Compute Stick, which was just a stick that plugged into your HDMI port. And that's it. It was a stick that you plug.
So it's like a Roku that sticks into like a TV, and you could make a TV a computer.
Basically, it was a cool thing that they could do, but they gave up on it because it was expensive and nobody was really using it, and you were really limited what you could do with that form factor.
So yeah. I'm looking it up. It's like HP Elite Mini 800 G9 desktop PC. Yes, that looks pretty small. HP Z2 Mini G9. So this one, the Elite Mini 800 G9 is $699. That's almost $700. And then the HP Z2 Mini G9 workstation, that's $1,300. So we're getting toward Mac Mini with M4 Pro prices there.
Simon B. asks a good question. Do we actually know what is Apple Intelligence? Simon B., for the love of God, go to Engadget.com or search Google Engadget.com Apple Intelligence, because we have been writing about this for the past 6 months. Okay.
What if they're asking a more conceptual, like existential question? What is truth?
I mean, like the Apple Intelligence to recap for everybody, is Apple's spin on all the AI features we've seen coming to PCs and other systems. It's like the Copilot stuff in Windows, but Apple Intelligence specifically is more focused on delivering features in things you're actually using. So if you have a newer iPhone, you get iOS 18.1, take a look at your notifications and the way like you're, instead of like a wall of like 10 notifications from one of your cameras or something, you will get a condensed thing of like, hey, saw somebody up front for a while, you know, or if you have like a wall of messages or text from your friends, it tries to condense that into a thing that is easily grokkable before diving into like all the individual messages. Yeah.
I don't like that X took Grok away. I mean, from don't. The old, I mean, school don't. Sci-fi fans.
What you do is not even acknowledge what Grok, what X did. So how about we just use the word like we normally.
Yeah. No. And yeah. That is Heinlein.
Yes.
That belongs to Heinlein. That belongs to someone who isn't the owner of Twitter. Yeah. So,
and even he's not a great dude. But anyway. That's
Buddy 30, yeah. Yeah. Buddy 305 Love says that I should also check out the Atom Man X7 Ti.
I've seen.
This looks pretty cool. I like the screen on the front that will show you like some stats about I think the temperature and, you know, maybe like how
it's adorable.
Full the SSD is. Like, yeah, that's cool. I didn't know that these existed. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I'm just the producer. I apologize.
This thing is super cool. But what is the system? Intel Ultra 9. So you're using Intel's graphics. Hit or miss, right? Like hit or miss with what you could do with that. I think what's interesting about the Mac Mini is that it is Apple's GPU stuff has been proven to be pretty good. Like you can run some decent games on that. More games are coming over to Mac. Steam support for some games is there. I'm just more overall impressed by the amount of computing work you could do. But yes, there are PC variants to this too. I don't think as small as the new Mac Mini, though, at least from what I've seen.
Yeah. And then Mark Dell says, oh, my dad is using the AirPods Pro and he's amazed by the hearing aid feature. He says it's going to change his life.
Yes, I've heard that from a bunch of people, and not even older folks. Like there are people in their 20s and 30s who have hearing issues and like they don't want to be walking around with hearing aids because there's like a social stigma to it, or they don't want to like just be doing that. Now you could just have AirPods in and have some of that help. So that's great.
It's true. Yeah. Especially when I like go to a grocery store or something, I see a lot of people who are working at the grocery store just have one AirPod.
That's what
in.
I do. It's how I live.
Go off and listen to music. Yeah, whatever. Whatever makes the shift more bearable.
Yeah,
but
go ahead.
It can also be a sneaky way of being like, hey, you know what? I blew out my ears listening to like crazy dubstep music or something, and now I have hearing loss earlier than I would think.
There's totally that. I've been actually thinking like, man, my life, my high school life would have been so different if I had like wireless earbuds and the ability to just like walk around and have stuff. Because in high school, like I wish I could have portable music. I wish I could have a like way to shut out part of the world and stuff. That's a whole thing. But man, things are just so much different now. I see a good question from Wes Jackson. Does the power button on the bottom of the Mac Mini bother us, or the fact that the mouse, including the iMac and Mac Mini, still charges on the bottom? I could tell you what Apple thinks about the mouse specifically, because people still make fun of it. Whenever I bring this up to an Apple person, they're like, well, you just have to plug it in for 1 minute. You plug it in for 1 minute and you get like tens of hours of charge time. So I think that's their thing. They don't want like the visible. They would rather do that than give you a visible port on the bottom or the back of that thing. I also don't think they've done the work to fully redesign the Magic Mouse, that whole thing. To a certain extent, I kind of understand that. You know, it's annoying when you lose power in the middle of a work session, but also your Mac will like give you the heads up like, hey, you're charging. You don't live at your computer all day, so you could just like as you're walking away, plug it in. It would be nice if there was an easier solution to that, but I kind of understand why Apple is just like not too bothered to fix it. The power button on the bottom of the Mac Mini. I saw people talking about that too. It's like on the bottom rear corner instead of like on a port on the back or something, or even directly up front. I know Apple wants to make that thing look clean. I actually don't think that's a big deal, because the Magic Keyboard has a power button. And the way most people will be turning on their Mac is by sitting down, hitting the power button that is on their keyboard. The power button on the system itself is sort of like last resort type of thing. If like you have a hard reset you need to do, or you just need to cut power immediately, you're not going to be in daily usage reaching around and tapping that power button. So I think that's like the main thing there. Also, a lot of people don't shut down their Macs fully.
I disagree with that. I turn my computer off. I turn my laptop completely
off.
Ben,
you bought the worst iPhone, so I cannot trust your judgment. The smallest iPhone. No, but you're right. You're right. A lot of people do that too. But the keyboard has the power button. Now, if you're using...
It wasn't the worst iPhone when I bought it. It was a decent iPhone when I bought it.
We kind of warned you that that screen would be a problem. Like you would grow out of that. But anyway, if you have a PC keyboard on your Mac Mini, then yeah, you are kind of screwed. Then you are going to be reaching around and like, you know, hitting that button. That's a pain, but it's not like the end of the world. That thing is tiny. You know, I don't think you're not like shoving it way back on your desk because you probably want it accessible for the USB port. So it is a choice. Apple is building their systems for people who have Apple accessories. And I think that's mainly what they're thinking about here.
So if you want to also contribute to our live stream, I say at the end of every live stream, it gets cut off from the audio version, that the live stream makes us smarter. It remembers stuff that we forgot. Remember, you can always tune in on the Engadget YouTube channel or send us an email at podcast@engadget.com. In other news, the FTC has told Lyft that it needs to tell drivers how much they're actually going to make.
What a concept.
I said a few weeks ago that I had just finished the, what is it, FX adaptation of Super Pumped, The Battle for Uber, which was Mike Isaacs' book about like the founding of Uber.
I forgot they made that. And man, okay.
I mean, it's just because I'm a big JGL head. I'm sorry. I watched Angels in the Outfield literally until the VHS tape broke.
I've got thoughts about JGL and his current career trajectory. But yes, yes, yes. Okay. We were referring to Joseph Gordon-Levitt, kids, if you were confused.
There was a B plot in the series where Austin Guyte, who was responsible for recruiting the majority of like the first wave of drivers for Uber, was promising up and down that like all these black car drivers were going to be making something like double or triple what they were making just doing traditional ride hailing or working for, you know, as a contractor for a company. And the B plot also went through, you know, this very humble driver saying, oh, well, I want to make more money for my family, and like tracking how Uber's promise did not actually come true for him, or it only existed for a few months. So I think this is a fantastic step forward. It's definitely a bit more regulation. So if you don't like regulation, argue with the wall, maybe.
Argue with the wall.
I just want people to like actually be able to plan their finances. And the fact that these like rideshare services, really everything as a service sort of companies, play a shell game with people who are otherwise low wage workers, that's not great.
It's not great. And also because taxi driving used to be a pretty reliable job for a lot of people, especially like immigrants moving to America. Like there are the jokes about immigrant taxi drivers, but it is a thing that people have done in New York. Like you work towards paying off like a taxi medallion, right? Like you would buying a house. That's just an investment for you, basically. So it's I've hated what these companies have all done. Like I don't know if you remember this, Ben. You remember the era before Uber and Lyft and everything? New York used to have Halo, which I think was a London-based startup. There used to be like a couple different ones. If you're in New York, you can also hail normal cabs with the Curb app. I really like the Curb app, actually. But before then,
I still see people using their hands.
I use my
too.
Using your hand. New York, that's a great thing. Doesn't work everywhere. I've learned in Las Vegas, you cannot hail a taxi, because you have to do it at the hotel bases, basically, and taxi drivers get annoyed picking up anywhere else. But yes, there used to be old ways of doing it. When these companies came in, like all I saw from Uber and Lyft was just like pure bullshit to like get themselves into markets and everything. New York, because it had such a strong taxi, it has a taxi commission, it has a strong taxi industry, they were able to resist. So you don't get Ubers with normal people driving. In New York, Uber drivers, Uber and Lyft drivers have to be like still technically limousine drivers. That's kind of the whole deal. Something I also learned when I moved away from New York, you get bad drivers. You get really bad drivers on Uber and Lyft because normal people just driving around in their cars, not fun, not great. Anyway, It's a good thing. It's a good thing. You also wanted to bring up this thing about OpenAI, Ben. I know you were interested in this. OpenAI's Whisper.
Yeah, because it's something that we use to transcribe the podcast now. I just let my Otter subscription lapse because I was using it for another client. I was using it, you know, 5 or 6 times a week. So I figured, okay, yeah, I can take this off of my taxes. It's like $100 a year or something. Now I'm not working with those folks anymore. So I don't know if I can really justify the expense of not using this 5 or 6 times a week. So I'm like, okay, what else am I going to do? LLMs have gotten so much better for transcription especially. So let's go off and try this. I got Mac Whisper a while ago, and it's good. It needs some work.
Because Mac Whisper,
the UI needs some work. Especially.
I love Mac Whisper. We talked about it, but that essentially runs the Whisper, the OpenAI Whisper model on your system. So it takes forever. It takes, like, especially on an M1 system, Ben, it probably takes you like, what, half an hour to an hour to like transcribe a podcast or something.
No, not really. I mean, I had 2 hours of tape from like a bunch of different speakers. It didn't have diarization, which is the fancy way of saying like differentiation,
which is essential. If you're doing transcript, if you want a transcription tool, it has to kind of do that. So that's why I stopped.
Yeah. There were so many different voices in this, though. This is something that I recorded in like a big, busy, you know, New York City park. I'm hanging out with this guy who, he's doing an art project. This is a guy who is kind of running a stand. Mm-hmm. So people come up to him. And so there are so many different speakers. I really wish that there were additional speakers or that you could differentiate between speakers. But the thing that I haven't seen that is something that Reuters was talking about just at the end of last week is that OpenAI's Whisper has a tendency to just make stuff up whole cloth as if, you know, it's trying to infer maybe some garbled speech or something like that. And then it will just like kind of free associate. And the problem is that people are using this in hospitals.
Yeah.
That's a situation where you really can't have something just like go off all crazy, especially because if it goes off all crazy and it sounds a little scary or something, like I saw some examples in the Associated Press, not Reuters. Reuters would get mad at me for that. The AP article saying that, you know, sometimes it got a little bit scary. It said, you know, stuff about like violence and knives and things like that. Hospitals have psych wards in them. Like, it's very possible that you could have someone talking about that. And if you had some kind of, I don't know, like automatic flagging tool for whether or not to get someone a psych eval, that would be a psych eval based on OpenAI's free association. But we're getting ahead of ourselves.
It's a sensitive data environment. And I think that's the main thing. So like, hey, I use, we've talked about using the tool Descript. I use them for like producing our transcriptions, and I go in and like tweak stuff, like people's names and like hardware names that doesn't get right. I use that also for producing the social media videos and the audiograms we put out. We are not, you know, we're just a couple of people talking about technology, and I do look over the transcripts and I tweak things as I need to. I've basically been like, I'm okay if a couple words or some things are kind of wrong, because the overall transcript is still a useful service to people who need it. And it's also a useful service to like search engines and things like that. But in the medical environment, or if it's like sensitive legal information, like I would be really careful about using any of these AI tools. Yeah.
So the politicians are live streaming once again. What do you have to say about that, Devendra?
I do have to say about that. Let's flip to that video, because what's happening, and I was so excited about this. First of all, I was really excited when the news dropped that, you know, Kamala Harris's VP candidate, Tim Walz, is a Dreamcast fan, is a Crazy Taxi fan. So over the weekend, I believe Tim Walz and AOC did a Crazy Taxi live stream, and it just brought back all the joy. It's also, I don't think AOC has seen Crazy Taxi before. So it's also introducing a new person into this world. And the
that's surprising to me.
Just like the insanity of Crazy Taxi. I love this game. I love the Dreamcast. I've talked about how much I love the Dreamcast. But Tim Walz just has like, pure love for it. This was fun to see. And it was certainly a much more fun thing to talk about rather than like the Nazi rally that happened in New York. So here's what I'm going to do. And to listeners to this podcast, all I can tell you is vote. This is a pretty important election for America, for the future of this country. So if you care about any of this stuff, you should probably vote. I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. But, you know, read things. Please read the news. Please read about like what is actually happening. I will fully endorse on my end. Like I already voted for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. I put in my early voting in Georgia because I didn't want like any of the weird like ballot mess that's going to happen. Like this next week is going to be a mess in this state. In a lot of other states, we've already seen ballot boxes being set on fire. We've seen people intimidating others at voting, you know, at polling booths. Not great. Just it's going to be a really tough week. Please vote because, yeah, this country depends on it. Ben, any you want to add anything there?
Only that Tim Walz would probably love the Simpsons hit and run.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He would totally love it. I mean, he would be what the real baller move would be like if Tim Walz just pulled out his like 1000 hour Phantasy Star Online character, because the true Dreamcast heads know the Phantasy Star Online was one of the pioneering games for like console RPGs. It was barely an MMO, but on consoles, we didn't really have much. And the fact that you could plug in a 33.6 modem or a 56K modem on a Dreamcast and like play an RPG over phone lines with people from your couch blew me the hell away. So, you know, I will always love you, Dreamcast.
He's most likely to have fantasy college football, I think,
yeah,
rather than Fantasy.
I mean, weren't they
online
playing Madden or something too? They were playing a football game as well. So, like,
of course. So the age of ice cream machine broke is finally over. McDonald's can finally service their own machines. They can finally get around the hardware locks. Finally, the FTC was like, you know what? It is really dumb that you can only have one approved technician come and like fix something that is hardware locked in this way. We don't have enough technicians. You can also like charge exorbitant amounts of money. So if you're annoyed about, you know, the right to repair issues on your phones, computers, and laptops, if you're annoyed at Apple, especially because so many people are like, oh my God, I like would never get anything in the Apple ecosystem because of how difficult it is to fix, then you are already a right to repair advocate. And you should be throwing your votes behind maybe an administration that supports right to repair too,
or workers or things like that. Specifically, the mystery behind why McFlurry machines break down all the time is that being McDonald's corporate has to send somebody like an official repair person to fix that machine at every franchise.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. And so it ends up being a game of you can't put out enough fires because everybody loves the McFlurries, so they're going to be used a lot, which means that the moving parts are going to end up getting messed up. And the next thing we need to do is the same thing, but for John Deere tractors.
I mean,
it's right to repair all the way down.
Right to repair all the way down. I mean, we saw a bunch of stories. Farmers are like hacking their tractors to fix them. That is the way things should be. And it's funny like to talk about this now, too, because we were also talking about like, man, that Mac Mini sure is adorable and cute. You got nothing to repair there, buddy. Like it's all like one little chip and like a circuit board and like nothing is fully removable and you can't really do much. You can open it up, but there's nothing much you can do as a consumer. So that is the price we pay for like cute, well, you know, pretty looking electronics. We kind of miss that. We kind of miss that sometimes. And sometimes you need to just dive in and fix a big machine. So hopefully this will mean more working McFlurries. Are you a big McFlurry consumer, Ben?
I was. Actually, like within the last few years, I've started thinking like, man, I gotta like change my relationship with food. Not that it was bad or anything. It's just like I'm the only one looking out for myself.
Absolutely. Also, you're getting older, Ben. You're gonna feel it. You're feeling it. We are watching here, by the way, the iFixit video about why the McFlurry machines are always broken and how to fix them. So thank you to iFixit for always. Thank you for your service, iFixit. I've always wondered what's going on back there. My kids, like, we try to avoid McDonald's, honestly, but I don't have any major qualms around it. But I think we went on vacation last year at some point. The McDonald's was like the only thing at the rest stop to go to. And now my daughter calls it a happy dinner. All she wants is a happy dinner once in a while. And that's great. That's great. She doesn't demand it. honestly, I wish she would demand Happy Meals more often, because what she does demand instead is like the stuff I've started giving her. Like, she really likes pho. She really likes poke. These kids!
Yeah, that's expensive and difficult to do
at home.
It's
expensive. And then, like, yeah, I could get that delivery, $20 for a single, you know, thing for her. Also, I don't know what happened to pho, but at least out here in Georgia, we have a huge immigrant population, a lot of great food from all across Asia. But goddamn, everything is expensive. Pad Thai, $20. $20 before delivery fees. Pad Thai is a five, it should be a $5 dish that you get really easily at a local restaurant or something. But anyway. That's the news. Thank you. Hopefully the McFlurries will feel better. I want to shout out a couple things that we just covered here at NN Gadget. First of all, we have a review of the Kindle Colorsoft. Valentina Palladino, our deputy editor of commerce and buying advice, covered that for us. She calls it the missing link in Amazon's e-reader lineup. Score of 84. She really likes it. And this thing looks cool. We were doing some comparisons, like in Slack, we were comparing it to like the Kobo color reader. And I think we all noticed that the Kobo's color screen looks a little more saturated, like the colors are just punchier. But Valentina still likes this. And if you're in the Kindle ecosystem, I can't blame you if all your books and your entire library is there. This is certainly a good option. I have been a Kindle user for a long time. Last year, I picked up a Kobo e-reader just to like start separating myself from Amazon. And you know what's really tough is having multiple e-readers, because then it's like, oh, my other library
is
over there.
Tell us more about your first world problem.
It's a really annoying thing. Like, this is how it works. This is how like the lock-in happens, is that you can't just bring your Amazon library to Kobo or something. You can put some of those books on your computer and do the whatever stripping it is to like make it an EPUB book and then get that over to Kobo. But man, it's just a pain. So I don't know. I'm doing new books on Kobo. Old books I still haven't read are still on my Kindle. The Colorsoft looks very cool. I think that's a big takeaway we can have here. I still don't know if like a Kindle, I don't know if I need a color e-reader. I would love like a bigger color thing that would be better for comics. But tablet screens have gotten so good, especially with OLED. Like OLED, I'm just such a big OLED fan. I think that's the main thing for me. We also have a review of the DJI Osmo Action 5 Pro from Mr. Steve Dent. He says it's finally a worthy GoPro rival. So that's a good thing. Are you an action camera fan, Ben?
I'd like to be.
Yeah.
I'd like to like have a little drone just to play around with.
For you, I would more recommend the DJI Osmo Pocket, which is the portable little camera we use, because you may occasionally be doing video production stuff. But, you know, I like an action camera. I bought a GoPro like a couple of years ago, and I swear to God, I have not actually been able to use it for anything. It's very much an aspirational device. We do have a small drone, and you know what the drone does? It flies up to my roof and makes sure there are no more holes in my roof. Or a chimney. Like, it's the drone goes places.
That's actually a great way to inspect your own roof. I've never thought about
that. Or my chimney. A lot of, like, roofing companies will just send a drone up there to, like, do the inspection.
Wow. Yeah, that's really smart. It's a way to not get on a ladder. Because so many surgeons say, don't get on a ladder.
And also, it's super easy. Like, it takes, you know, a couple minutes to throw a drone up there. And you have a high-quality camera and a real-time feed and all that stuff. So, anyway.
That seems like the sort of thing that homeowners insurance should be covering sometimes.
It's a whole thing, Ben. Yes, yes. It does sort of cover it. What roofers do is that they go around neighborhoods and like, hey, your roof's looking kind of old. We can help you get it covered under insurance. Like, it's a whole...
They just fly a drone around?
Well, they're like, well, we're helping your neighbors and we will throw the drone up there and they will work to make sure your insurance will pay for the new roof, which can cost like $20,000 or so, but doing it through insurance, it's like maybe $1,000 or whatever for your copay or $2,000. So yes to action cameras. Ben, I feel like, first of all, in terms of what we're working on, I'm working on a lot of stuff. Apple just announced 4 different products. Somebody's going to have to review those products. So some of us are going to be heads, you know, I'm basically neck deep in a lot of like testing of things right now. There's a new game console coming soon. We're testing that. We're reviewing that. Let's move on to picks. What do you got?
It's over the garden wall season, Yay. Everybody. It's the 10-year anniversary. They did a 10-year anniversary concert in L.A., the Blasting Company that did all of the music for Over the Garden Wall. Elijah Wood was there. A lot of the original voices were there. Unfortunately, Jack Jones, who is the singing voice of the frog, and also just sang a couple of the other marquee songs for Over the Garden Wall, he was 89 when he died. So he lived a good long life. And you could kind of tell that this was being sung by like a kind of gentle-voiced old man, too. He had that sweetness in his voice. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, this is a mini-series from Cartoon Network that premiered in 2014. It is a little bit of just a send-up to the holiday spooky season, fall season. It is also an adaptation of Dante's Inferno.
Oh, yes, it is. There's also a lot of David the Gnome in there. I mean, come on, I love David the Gnome. Yeah.
Yeah, it is also, it feels very, you know, old American and European, like mythological. And it's also like a huge, huge homage. Why did I say that?
I don't know.
It's a homage to classic animation. So this is the animation of like the 1930s or so. There is one episode that is like, really, really relies on rubber hose animation.
Yeah. There's a lot of like Fleischer-looking stuff in here, yeah.
It's about two brothers who get lost in the woods, and their entire goal is to get out. And so if you know about basic mythology and a little bit about Dante's Inferno, you know what's going to happen. They get chased around by spooky stuff. They meet different crazy characters. It has become a really like classic rewatch for a lot of people. I don't know how many other things have been like canonized like Over the Garden Wall has in like the last 15 years.
It's not like a hugely popular thing, but it has like basically garnered like a huge cult audience, which is I think kind of the perfect thing for this. So yeah, good show. Check it out. It was also like unavailable to stream for a long time too. So I'm happy to see like that's a big thing. I'm looking at the thing here. Yeah, we're not going to play this trailer. I want to shout out the Netflix remake of Ranma ½, which is, remember that anime series? Ranma was like a classic 80s anime series about a boy who turns into a girl when he gets hit with water and his father turns into a panda. It's comedy, kind of a romantic comedy, a situational comedy, also action series at time because there was always a lot of good fighting. It's been remade for Netflix, basically following, at least from what I've seen the first couple episodes, kind of follows the exact same path as the original. But the animation is nice and clean. It's still a fun watch. And, you know, it's cozy anime. Like, that is the sort of thing where I'm just like, I could just sit down, really enjoy this J-pop intro song, the really soothing ending song. It's funny. The action's pretty good, too. Like, it just looks cool. So I want to shout that out. Like, for anime fans, if you've not seen Ranma before, you can see the original. That is up on Crunchyroll right now. The animation's good. I think that's a good thing, especially what happened to Uzumaki, which had a good first episode, and then the animation just went super downhill after that. So Ranma ½ is my recommendation, especially if you checked out Dan the Dan, like I recommended. It's good stuff.
Very different tonally.
Very different tonally, but also I feel like a good chaser. Like, Down to Down is pure. It's just like a little like crazy, mad, you know, crazy mad anime. And Ranma is much more chill, even though it's about like much more fantastical stuff at times. So, good stuff.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. Podcast is produced by me, Ben Illman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, Blue Sky, Mastodon, everywhere, and a podcast about movies and TV at The Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
You can find me online at, I don't know, just listen to the
wherever.
Your router, and I might be whispering to you. Don't try to contact me. No, I'm just kidding. If you want to see my old tweets, find me on Twitter, Hey Bellman, HeyBellman. Email us at podcast@engadget.com, leave us a review on iTunes, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. That includes Spotify. Why did I say
that? I don't know.
It's a homage.